curtain has descended across the country.
Today, our very freedom came under attack.
If young people do not see hope, what kind of message are we sending?
Welcome to the very first episode of Talk to a Diplomat, where we live and breathe the world. We'll be getting to our special guest in just a minute. But first, I'd like to talk a little bit about what we aim to do here with the show. One of the most popular articles ever written here for the Atlantic Council of Canada was just over a year ago. It was called, "So, You Want to Be a Diplomat?" It got so many views not because it contained groundbreaking research or spectacular new insights into an ongoing international problem. Instead, it was a very concise summary of the different roles that Canadian diplomats take and a how-to guide for the first steps in that direction. And so, what my personal experience, and perhaps this is not representative, but it seems so easy to look at international figures of high standing, but so much harder to figure out, well, how do they get there? So, here on the show, half the time, we'll be talking to people who have made a career in international relations, broadly defined, and the other half, we'll be talking to young Canadians who are passionately interested about a particular topic in the field and want to someday make a living. Our special guest for today is Dr. Szabó Stefania, the Consul General of Hungary here in Toronto. Among her experiences, she's been an economic counselor at the Hungarian Embassy in Tel Aviv, an advisor to the State Secretary for International Trade in Budapest, and of course is now here in Toronto. For understandable security reasons, I couldn't bring audio recording equipment into the consulate, but I will be sharing the story of our conversation together. One of the first things I noticed was that for her education at the University of Szeged and later in Stockholm, she went for law and is now a diplomat. I wondered what caused this change, and what she said was rather unique. Most people, or at least myself, I would imagine, most people conceive of international relations as a very impersonal field. You sit in an office or at a desk well away from the problems you're seeking to solve, designing policies for this and programs for that. But for Dr. Szabó, it was precisely the opposite. She said that a deeply personal engagement with a topic was what gave meaning for her. And in criminal law, and one day she hoped to be a judge, this simply wasn't possible. However, she was able to leverage her legal expertise into a company involved with exporting and importing. This being in the early 90s, there were numerous free trade agreements in the works with the EU, and the private sector needed legal expertise to help them navigate these new agreements. Equal to this need for personal engagement, however, was what might be called problem solving, the need to find something wrong with the world, to tackle it with every skill and tool at hand, and to solve it as fast as feasible. And this particular skill she's applied in a number of different scenarios, from the hyper-local, observing elections in Bosnia not just once but three different times, focusing on a relatively narrow agenda here in Toronto, or by focusing on a broader scale of problems in Budapest when she was working on relations with the Middle East and international organizations. But let's take a step back. What is a consul general doing on a daily basis? I ask this very question. The primary focus of the Hungarian consulate here in Toronto is, as one might expect, to promote trade and business between the two countries. This currently numbers into the hundreds of millions of dollars US. While that's certainly a large sum of money, there's certainly room for improvement. Of course, they also provide services to the Hungarian-Canadian community, such as all kinds of visas, student work or otherwise, citizenship requests, and other documentation for people traveling between the two countries. A third focus, which struck me immediately, was the cultural focus in promoting links between the mother country of Hungary and the community here in Canada. As I found out, there are approximately 315,000 Hungarian Canadians, most of which are in southern Ontario, between Toronto and Hamilton. It's certainly not a monolithic community. You have individuals who came to Canada in the wake of 1989 with their newfound freedom of movement, there are those who came after the revolution of 56. And of course, there are your professional expats who are on business trips for one thing or another. The community here, however, is certainly active enough to keep the consulate busy. As soon as I walked in, I noticed that splayed across the walls were numerous examples of art created, as I found out, by Hungarian Canadians. It's a testament to the Hungarian diaspora's activity in many different walks of life. Perhaps at this point, if you're a student, you might be thinking, okay, this is an interesting person, but where's the relevance for me? Well, I'm glad you asked. I shall tell you. There are, I think, three key points that can be drawn from her experience. First, perhaps this is an obvious point, it's absolutely all right to change what you're doing. Dr. Szabo at one point wanted to be a judge, but is now a diplomat, and got there by helping trade companies figure out how to export and expand their businesses internationally. This is not the sort of path that appears to one at age 18, you know, by some sort of magical foresight. The second, and this is more of a cautionary tale, it's very easy, depending on what specifically you do, to face a heavy emotional toll from the task at hand. And I don't say this just because Dr. Szabo happened to be working in the Balkans in the aftermath of Srebrenica. No matter where you end up, there's likely to be times, well, I say likely, it's almost certain, there will be times where, because of limited resources, or limited time, or both, or other unimaginable reasons, that you may not be able to provide help to those who are asking for it. And that can take a toll on you personally. And so, it's certainly easy to get seized in the possibilities of what can be accomplished, and that's a good thing. It's a powerful motivating factor, and it can spur some incredible accomplishments. All the same, it's not the only side of the story, and so anyone looking to follow a career in this should be ready for the occasional setback. The third lesson, however, is precisely the antidote to this. You need to find a way around it, through it, whichever way you choose to deal with this challenge. Maybe this is a personal thing. Maybe you prefer a much quicker pace of problem solving, as Dr. Szabo does, and that grander scale problems, maybe it's not your personal area of expertise. Maybe it's the particular focus of the job you're in. After working on broad scale policy towards the Middle East, Dr. Szabo ended up transitioning into more of a human resources area, working to create new curricula and facilities to train the next generation of Hungary's diplomatic corps. Something quite different from what she was previously used to, but a change of pace that in the long run was helpful to know. And even if it's the entire career field that you've been in for years, it's not the end of the world. So long as you can realize what's not fitting with you, find an appropriate alternative, and seize the opportunity to transition to those alternatives, not only will it feel personally more fulfilling to have made the leap, but it will also be more valuable in terms of the impact you make as a whole. Changing topics for a minute, through our research here at the Atlantic Council of Canada, we found that for young Canadians around student, high school student and university age, the relevance of NATO to their personal lives just isn't there. To be sure, there's a minority that is passionately engaged with the world and absolutely understands its relevance. But for a majority, perhaps as high as 3/5, this just isn't the case. So I asked Dr. Szabo, do you think this is the same in Hungary? What's your experience? Her comments put a different perspective on matters. For her, it was not so surprising that Canadians might be a bit reluctant to engage. After all, we're geographically quite distant from many of the hotspots in the world. We have, by and large, been at peace for decades. We may have troops deployed now, but it's certainly not a country mobilizing effort like occurred during the Second World War. And actually, these factors overlap somewhat with the Hungarian experience. They certainly have far more neighbors than we do, and that gives a certain reason to be more aware of world events. But Hungary has also been at peace for decades now. To be sure, there are enough Hungarians who remember the years of communism, and even more that can recall the disintegration of Yugoslavia next door in the 90s, Dr. Sabo being one of them, being able to hear artillery in the distance from her house during university. But a new generation is growing up now that is entirely used to not only peace, but prosperity. More and more integrated with the European Union and its international norms. And because this peace has not yet been broken, the attention paid to its defense is waning. So in this regard, at least, Canadian and Hungarian youth have something in common. On a lighter note, the last thing I asked Dr. Sabo before our time was up, for any Canadians visiting your country, what's one thing they would absolutely have to do? And I'd never heard about this before, but apparently, due to the numerous examples of early 20th century architecture around the country, which have partly decayed over time, and some of them have been destroyed through violence, it has become quite popular to build a pub amongst the ruins, if you will, of these older buildings. The ruined pubs, they call them. And it's quite popular for people of all ages to host a festival of sorts inside these ruined pubs. I've never been to Budapest myself, but if I have the opportunity someday, this is something I will certainly check out. And if any of you are traveling, I would suggest you do the same. So to recap what I, and hopefully you, have learned from Dr. Sabo, international relations does not have to be an impersonal thing dealing with the lives of millions from afar. It can be a very personal thing. And indeed, depending on your personality, perhaps it's better that it is such a personal thing to be dealing with the people whose lives you might be changing on an up-close personal basis. And of course, there are more general lessons as well, namely seizing whatever opportunities are available. In Dr. Tsabo's case, that was seizing one of the innumerable opportunities that emerged as Hungary transitioned away from communism, and always being ready for something new. You certainly don't have to have lived under communism to see chances like these in your own life. And that might take you anywhere from Tel Aviv to Budapest to here in Toronto. The future, as they say, is not ours to see. Thanks for tuning in. Check out our website, natocouncil.ca, for coverage of ongoing events every single day. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn, all of which you can find from our homepage. Next time, we'll be talking to an up-and-coming analyst of women in security, with a focus on Saudi Arabia in particular. Until then, keep checking back for more episodes. I'm Colin McEwen, and this has been Talk to a Diplomat.